Hello, everyone. I'm Marcus Robertson, assistant editor at Becker's Healthcare. Today on the podcast, we'll be talking about rural hospital transformation. And joining me is Michael Morgan, senior vice president of strategic analysis for the Community Hospital Corporation. Michael, thanks for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Marcus. It's good to be here.
So I mentioned that we are talking about rural hospital transformation, but what do we mean by that? What kind of transformation are we talking here?
Yeah, great question. So what I mean when I talk about rural hospital transformation is really, you know, kind of the evaluation and change process that really many rural hospitals across the country are evaluating and some are in the midst of going through to respond to challenges across our industry, but challenges that more acutely affect rural and independent hospitals, in my opinion. And, you know, many words have been spoken about the issues and challenges facing hospitals generally. Much ink has been spilled writing about these things. I think it's, you know, well understood that half of hospitals are operating in the red based on recent reports by Kaufman Hall. In states like Texas, it's even a more kind of dramatic picture for rural hospitals. One in four rural hospitals in our state is at risk of closure. And so these are alarming trends. They're born out of both kind of post-pandemic and inflationary cost issues. And hospitals all across the country, and specific rural hospitals, are looking at different strategies, different ways to reverse the negative financial trends that they have been seeing as of late. And so that's kind of what we mean when we talk about rural hospital transformation.
Okay, so federal programs are impacting rural hospitals' operating models, but I'm curious, can you go into that just a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. So the recent one that's kind of garnered the most headlines is the rural emergency hospital designation. From a kind of federal CMS standpoint, it's the first new hospital designation really since critical access hospital status more than 25 years ago was created. And it's, again, I think born out of these recent trends that we're seeing, the alarm bells sounding relating to rural hospital sustainability. But there are some difficult aspects of that designation. It does force a hospital to suspend all of its inpatient services and move forward as strictly a emergency department with supporting outpatient services. It is a lifeline to communities in many ways. It does provide hospitals with needed recurring funding in the form of a facility fee payment that's paid monthly by CMS. So there are some benefits to the program, but there are some very challenging aspects to it as well. You know, it does force hospitals to reduce the services that they offer. Though, as we talk about, you know, rural hospital transformation, hospitals are in the midst of looking at those things kind of concurrently to that, focusing on services and really trying to identify and analyze services that aren't financially supporting the hospital is something that unfortunately lots of people are having to look at in the current climate. So that in a nutshell is REH, rural emergency hospital status. You know, certainly there are still many hospitals across the country who are operating as critical access status, receiving cost-based reimbursement. With sequestration and other factors at play, it's not as supportive as it once was historically. So those are all things that we're looking at and talking to various folks about across the industry.
Okay, so some of these models, how are hospital financial leaders viewing these benefits, risks, and what's your take personally, Michael?
Yeah, so that's a big question. I mean, I think as we kind of stated, you know, the new programs like rural emergency hospital status, other states have tried to do similar programs to incentivize and really help rural hospitals along the process of evaluating services and reviewing their operating model. To talk about the benefits and risks, there are certainly both of those. And candidly, because the rural emergency hospital program is still so new, it really started kind of this calendar year. And many states, frankly, haven't even adopted the necessary laws. And from a state licensure perspective, the ability to grant these new types of licenses to facilities, it's really still, you know, the analogy is kind of the plane that's still getting off the ground a little bit. So some states have passed this, and there are rural emergency hospitals that are getting approved in various states across the country, but it is still a very new model. So when we talk about, you know, how do financial leaders, the leaders of those organizations, and then their boards, you know, how do they really interpret this new designation? It is a process, and it's something that should be looked at both from a financial perspective, a service perspective, as well as a community perspective. And there are lots of things to consider. I think for the financial leaders, you know, really the task falls on them to evaluate how this new program sets the hospital on better financial footing. Certainly it's considering the monthly facility fee payment that we already talked about. It's evaluating how the overall financial reimbursement model changes for the hospital. Many of the prime, what I would call rural emergency hospital candidates, are hospitals that were formerly critical access hospitals. So there's a whole process that needs to be evaluated, because while the new rural emergency hospital keeps outpatient services, the mechanism by how that's reimbursed changes in many instances, because as we mentioned already, critical access hospitals receive cost-based reimbursement. So it is a detailed analysis that hospitals have to go through to evaluate, you know, how those outpatient services that are going to stay were reimbursed under a critical access model versus the new rural emergency hospital, which from Medicare's perspective is reimbursed at OPPS plus an incremental 5%. And so all of those things need to be evaluated in concert. Many rural hospitals have also benefited from the 340B program. That's a program that unfortunately is not allowed to continue under the REH model. So that's another, you know, significant consideration for hospitals who have 340B to make, moving from their current model to this new REH model. Certainly there's operational service model considerations, how the hospital's staffed, how the provider relationships are set up and maintained, and then partnerships. Anytime a hospital goes through a significant change like this, it affects sort of all the other players within the community healthcare space, right? It affects EMS. It affects the hospitals that those small rural hospitals have transfer agreements with. That's one of the requirements of the federal process of becoming an REH. You have to prove that you have contractual relationships to transfer patients to a tertiary care facility. And that's an important component of this, right? Because now these hospitals aren't able to keep the inpatients that they historically did to receive care in the community. They're transferring them out. So that affects a lot of the other players sort of in the healthcare ecosystem. So all those things are considerations. Certainly we're a little bit more focused on the financial ramifications of some of these new models here. But there are, you know, as I stated, both kind of operational and community considerations to be made as well.
Yeah, no shortage of considerations to factor in there. And you mentioned the Rural Hospital Emergency Program, you know, still so new, started this calendar year. So what are some specific factors that you think can clue in rural hospital leaders to consider converting their facility?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a lot of the things we kind of just talked through. Again, certainly the financial picture is a substantial consideration. I mean, in my opinion, the top consideration. These are difficult decisions for hospitals and communities to make. I mean, this model, by virtue of its design, reduces services in communities. And that's not an easy process or task for hospitals and for communities to undertake. So certainly there needs to be the hope of financial sustainability sort of at the end of that decision. And so I think that's first and foremost. And then just communication. I think trying to work through as best you can how, you know, what are the unknowns of this program? How are you engaging with the stakeholders involved in the decision? and what are the considerations to make. And as I mentioned, there's specific things like 340B that could potentially be lost under this model. That those are considerations to make as well. You know, for some hospitals, they are better off staying in their current model. You know, moving to this rural emergency hospital model would not help them financially. And so there's a kind of careful consideration that needs to be given to all those points.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's pretty, you know, it can be pretty important, the possibility of losing 340B. So with that in mind, are there alternatives to consider besides changing, you know, operation models?
Yeah, you know, I think the change in designation, like what we've been talking about, certainly that's a very significant decision that's fundamentally changing the kind of operating and service structure of the hospital. That's a huge decision. You know, as we talked about kind of at the top of the podcast, with all of the financial challenges and the issues facing hospitals currently, you know, really, when you talk about alternatives, I think everyone across the industry is just focusing on maximizing as efficiently as they can, both their kind of revenue structures and their cost structures. I know for many of the hospitals we work with, revenue cycle is a huge focus. We work with lots of hospitals who frankly are struggling with the switch from traditional Medicare to managed Medicare. There are challenges from a revenue cycle standpoint with some of those trends. How to get your cash in the door as effectively as possible. For us, for CHC, what we do, it's you know, how do independent rural hospitals bring scale to some of the things that they're doing? And those are some of the things that we help them with. And so those are all, you know, kind of conversations for the hospital leadership, for their boards to have. What are ways that they can grow and attract providers where appropriate, and what are ways that they can more effectively manage their costs, and then really managing, you know, kind of their balance sheet, the revenue cycle, and the cash flow, and looking at all of those things, how hospitals are staffed. I mean, there's constantly, you know, information in the news related to that. I think everyone who's probably listening to this is aware of the clinician and provider shortages that our country is facing. That's all factored into the current, you know, difficult financial situation that the industry finds itself in. And so, you know, there's lots of work being done to figure out how to, as effectively and safely as possible, staff our hospitals, care for the patients that are being seen, you know, provide and stand up the service lines that need to be there. And then, you know, take a look at things that might not be making sense operationally and from a service line perspective. Those are all things that are happening. And then I think for us too, you know, really trying to help some of our hospitals source providers, you know, help address some of these labor issues. We're all aware that labor costs and personnel costs are at the top of the list for hospitals. You know, how can we do that more effectively and try and think creatively about filling those positions and filling them with people that want to be there long-term. Again, you know, the contract labor challenges are receding due to kind of the pandemic and the things that have gone on there, but it is still a challenge, and it's something that we're all trying to navigate through.
So for rural hospital leaders who are kind of looking for help considering their options, I guess a key takeaway here is that there is guidance available with, you know, organizations like Community Hospital Corporation, for example. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I think so. And, you know, it's a daunting task even to say, you know, okay, how does this financial model look under this brand new designation? There's lots of unknowns there. There's lots that goes into evaluating those types of things. We've certainly helped some folks with that. We like to help people where they need it. So for specific hospitals, they need some things from us that we are glad to provide them. They don't need some of the things that we also offer. So we try to be approachable and collaborative in the ways that we work with hospitals, and kind of putting our full menu of services in front of them and letting them, you know, kind of speak to what they do and don't need. But, you know, I would add, I think as we continue to move through this difficult kind of stage within the industry in this time frame, the independent hospitals that are out there that are trying to continue to be independent, continue to you know, be that pillar for their community. We know that they need help. And so we're trying to bring resources to the table to help them. That's the mission of our company. It's really at the heart of what we do every day. And so, you know, for anybody listening to this who is feeling all of these things, there are probably many of you out there, know that, you know, you really don't have to go through it alone. And we certainly want to exist as a resource to help folks navigate through all these difficult and challenging decisions and provide resources to help the hospitals and the communities. That's really what we exist to do.
Well, none of the big problems in healthcare can be solved alone. So that I'm sure is a relief for lots of people to hear. I want to thank you, Michael, for your time. And, you know, this is a really important conversation. So I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Marcus, for you facilitating the conversation and appreciate the chance to speak about what we do.
We also want to thank our podcast sponsor, the Community Hospital Corporation. For our audience, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com/podcasts.